and welcome to another monthly installment of the Student Press Law Center podcast, a look at the legal issues impacting the rights of student journalists and the educators who work with them nationwide. I'm Frank Lamani, Executive Director of the Student Press Law Center and advocate for student voices at the college and high school level. We work with journalists to help them tell their most impactful stories by mastering the law. We're online at splc.org, and you can reach us on Twitter at SPLC or by email, splc@splc.org. One of the signature crown jewel programs at the Student Press Law Center is a fellowship called The Active Voice, a project that we launched back in 2016 to put college women out into their communities working as near-peer mentors to the high school students having difficulty finding their voices and expressing them. The program is specifically directed at trying to address the needs of teenage girls who uniquely experience the brunt of censorship in their schools with real potential lasting consequences for their ability to develop as leaders and as participatory citizens. This program just culminated in a presentation by the five inaugural class of Active Voice Fellowship recipients at Florida International University at the Copenhagen Center's annual conference on the status of women in media, and we couldn't be prouder of the job that those five inaugural fellows did. Well, the intellectual heft behind the Active Voice Project, the research that validated the need for this mentorship, came from our guest on the podcast this month, Janelle Belmas. Janelle Belmas is an associate professor at the School of Journalism and Mass Communications at the University of Kansas. She came to Kansas from Cal State Fullerton, where she was head of the journalism concentration in the Department of Communications. She holds degrees from the University of Wisconsin and a doctorate from the University of Minnesota in mass communication, along with her colleague Peter Bobkowski. She is the author of a newly published article titled Mixed Message Media, Girls' Voices and Civic Engagement in Student Journalism, which we commend to your attention and which we'll make sure to link on the SPLC website. So thank you so much, Janelle, a long, long-term friend and supporter of the SPLC and of everyone in student journalism, for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation.
Start us off by just talking about the research that you and Peter worked on that involved 461 high school journalism students, how you carried out that research, and what you concluded about their experiences with press freedom and censorship in schools.
Well, Peter had a relationship with a Southeastern States High School Journalism Association, like our Kansas one here, who's run by one of our wonderful colleagues here in Kansas, Eric Thomas. We have a relationship with a number of high school journalism associations around the states. And we had a relationship with one in the Southeast, and we went down to that state and visited each of their regional meetings. And we handed out small cards with five questions, only five, and that was a limitation of the study. Essentially asking each student, of which, as you just said, there were about 461 of them, basically five questions. What's your gender? What do you want covered? Have you ever been censored? Have you ever self-censored? And then a couple more. What do you want covered in your student media? What do you think is important? And we were really interested in finding out who had been censored, who was afraid of censorship, who self-censored out of fear of repercussion, and what kinds of things were they worried about being censored about. And the results, we think, were very telling. And that was the subject of what this research is all about, and we're hoping to replicate it around the country. So we know from prior research that women are more silenced, more interrupted. In fact, a very interesting case just came out. I don't know if you saw, or a paper just came out, Frank. I don't know if you saw it, on even the female Supreme Court justices being interrupted more by their male colleagues. Then
right.
So it goes all the way to the top, right?
Right.
I don't know if you saw it just came out. We know that women are silenced more often. We know that their voices are not heard. We know that they're interrupted more often. And we know also from Peter's research, particularly, that high school journalism has unique power to help promote civic citizenship, promote leadership in those who participate in it. It really has an important role, not only in the fourth estate, as it were, in making good journalism for our democracy, but also in promoting all sorts of good things in being a whole person and being a good civic citizen in our country. And so it's really important to make sure that all voices are heard. We want, of course, all students to be heard. I mean, our research focuses on women, but that doesn't mean we don't want men to be heard too. But so the big numbers, 38% of all respondents, men and women, of the 461 were told by a school employee not to cover something. So 38% of these young men and women were censored by their administrators. Of that group of people, 41% of those were girls. Okay, so almost half were girls, as opposed to 28% of boys. And 88% of girls agreed that they would not cover something when they were told not to. So they didn't essentially disagree, and as opposed to 64% of boys.
Yeah,
so really,
I want to linger on that one for just a second. Linger on that one for just a second, because I do think that that's a really interesting, not only do girls experience censorship more frequently than do boys, but that they are significantly less likely to challenge it, that it looked like about a third of the young men who were questioned did something to resist it, or defy the edict, while almost none of the female students did. I thought that was quite revealing.
Yeah, it is. And for whatever reason, again, there are many variables that we didn't go into that could have accounted for this. But yeah, they pretty much bowed their heads and said, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, we will do as we are told. A really important key factor
which also,
here, too.
Yeah, which also accounts for the fact that folks don't know nearly how frequently censorship occurs in schools. We have an ongoing campaign in which the Student Press Law Center is a participant, New Voices, an attempt to pass reform legislation around the country. And one of the persistent questions that arises is, can you demonstrate through specific factual examples that we have a serious censorship problem in our state? And when your survey shows that nearly 90% of the female students will do nothing in the face of censorship, then that is telling you that there is really an iceberg beneath that surface of cases that never come to light.
That's right. And we know, that students self-censor too, because they're afraid. They're afraid of repercussions. And in fact, more than twice as likely as males, which is the another big money number in our survey. 53% of female students refrain from discussing a topic or issue in their student media because of an anticipated negative reaction from the school, compared to 27% of their male colleagues. So 53% of girls said, we're not going to cover this because we're afraid of the blowback, as opposed to just 27% of the boys. And it's not that they're talking about just basic proms, and they really are interested in issues of the civic importance. This was right around the time of same-sex marriage, and one of the forbidden topics was LGBT issues and same-sex marriage. Their schools don't want them talking about drug issues. They don't want them talking about marijuana and any other sorts of drugs. They don't want them talking about religion. They don't want them talking about politics. They don't want them talking about anything that might offend anyone, upset anyone, disturb or be harmful or touchy. They don't want them talking about mental health or suicide or pregnancy or dress code, anything that the kids might find important either in their schools or in their communities. They don't want them talking about. Why? Because principals, by and large, want their student newspapers to be public relations mouthpieces. They want their student newspapers to show all the good things that happen in schools. I can't tell you, I run these at every Journalism Education Association, I run these panels where we talk about how to combat censorship. And the kinds of stories that come out about the things that the students are not permitted to cover are heartbreaking. I just got back from a journalism... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. I apologize.
I just got back from a Journalism Education Association meeting in Seattle where I ran one of these. And I had some students in schools in Hawaii where there was a TB outbreak and the students were forbidden to discuss it in their paper.
Wow.
We had a
similar experience at the Journalism Education Conference as well. We did a listening session as part of the Active Voice program. And among the stories that surfaced there that will never be told because it was censored was a story about the safety of the school parking lot. A student
mm-hmm.
was told that she could not write an article about the fact that there was inadequate safety signage to keep people from being hit by cars, even though there had been two pedestrian accidents at the same intersection, because of the principal's fear that casting the city government in a negative light would detrimentally affect the mayor's reelection campaign.
Oh, awful stuff. And then there was another one, too, where a student actually came to me after one of these sessions with her cell phone, and she had a picture of her school bus. Kids were standing in the aisles waiting because the school buses were so packed. The city hadn't put up enough money for additional school buses. And they were going to write a story about this, and the principal came in and said, absolutely not. And, you know, this is one of those times where you want to just pull out a checkbook and say, here's, you know, I don't know how much school buses cost, but here's, you know, X hundreds of thousands of dollars for a school bus. Just buy yourself a school bus, because my heavens. But there again, same deal, right? They don't want to make the school district look bad, but we're talking kids' safety here, right? I mean, those kids were packed back to back to back, you know, front to back in the aisles, and they can't talk about that. Again, here's some quotes that we got from this southeastern state.
Yeah.
We are asked to refrain from discussing any topic that would shed negative light on our school, even if it is honest and important. And again, these are exact quotes that we got on these cards. Talking about anything religious, any sort of subject that may raise eyebrows, like pregnancy rates in high schools, abortion, and politics. We were told not to mention any of our athletic teams losing. We are asked not to talk about serious topics like suicides and car accidents. We were asked not to write about the Confederate flag, again, southeastern state. We were asked not to write about standardized tests that would make the school look bad. We refrained from writing about anything that required anonymity in case we were asked to reveal names. So, and again, we are not talking about things that are fluff stories. We're talking about things that are important not only to people in a self-governing democracy, but also things things that are important to them as students in a community. And, you know, we know from even current stories that student journalism matters. You probably talked either here or elsewhere about the Pittsburgh, Kansas kids, right?
Sure.
And their research demonstrating that their newly hired principal had falsified all of her documents. And the fact that they dug into that, we know that high school journalism matters, which is why we're willing to go to the mat for these kinds of issues. And, you know, we're in a state that is fortunate enough to have an anti-Hazelwood law, and thank goodness we did. I mean, the principal was not jumping up and down cheering that this research was being done, but he probably knew he had very little power to stop it from happening. So, you know, Peter and I believe that, you know, making these topics off limits is really a lost opportunity, especially for girls' voices, but for all students' voices.
The article was published in a journal called Girlhood Studies, and so it really wasn't aimed primarily or exclusively at a journalism audience, but you make some interesting recommendations in there, including that people who are studying the subject of girls and girlhood ought to reach out and work more closely with the journalism and journalism education field. Can you talk a little bit about that and in particular about your observations that that female students do use off-campus media and blogs in ways that demonstrate that they are willing to speak out and use their voices?
Right. Well, some other research has demonstrated that extracurricular activities, we read some additional research where outside campus blogs or literary magazines or other sorts of activities for young girl journalists or young girl literary writers were really good fora for them to be able to express themselves in places that felt safe to them. In particular, there were a couple of studies that revealed that these girls were able to really express themselves in ways that their traditional high school news media places were unable to provide them those outlets. And in fairness, in ways that even traditional journalism doesn't let them do. I mean, in many of these cases, we're talking about newspapers and yearbooks and websites. But, you know, in some of these blogs or off-campus or extracurricular activities had them doing multimedia or mixed media, in a sense, where they're pasting up things in scrapbooks and those sorts of real hands-on artistic forum, but that still provide them the opportunity to really provide space for their own voices. And that demonstrated a couple of articles that we researched and people we talked to really showed that there were opportunities for girls to express themselves. And one of the recommendations we made is that there be a sharing between teachers and administration, ideally, but certainly teachers of traditional news outlets, student news outlets, and instructors and guidance people for these external off-campus extracurricular activities to see what works to encourage girls to find their voices and express themselves in ways that sometimes traditional classrooms don't allow, where they might feel more threatened by structures that have been put in place, you know, probably not intentionally, but certainly the structures in place that sometimes permit their male colleagues' voices to overshadow theirs. I really personally think, having been, you know, a girl growing up, admittedly not in a time when there were blogs, but certainly in a time when you know, my voice was less heard in classrooms. My male colleagues' voices were louder, and having those opportunities, I think, would have been really cool. And I was not a particularly shy, you know, young lady, but that being said, I think there would have been some very neat opportunities for certain off-campus or extracurricular activities to let those voices of me and my female classmates to be able to be heard in different ways than just through the student newspaper or yearbook. So, yeah, there are a number of studies out there, and the materials that I saw in these articles and the reports of the students in these articles, I think, give advisors some opportunities to really expand the kinds of things that they're doing in student newspapers and other curricular or more traditional media products.
So you mentioned the possibility, this is after all only one data point in one state,
yes,
that there's room and opportunity for further research. What are your thoughts there? Where might this research go from here?
Well, I think that I've already talked to colleagues in two or three other states. I know some folks in Washington State. I know some folks in Oklahoma. I know some folks in Ohio. I know some folks in Nevada. I'm hoping to be able to connect with these folks and replicate the study. There are some limitations to this, too. We wanted the kids in our pilot state to, and of course, we know the people in Kansas, too, so we want to do it in our own home state as well. But we know that there was no way for us to easily gather data on advisors. We know that advisors also can have a very big impact on whether or not a story is pushed through or not pushed through. Mm-hmm. And we did not gather that data because we wanted the kids to self-report. And they're, let's be honest, these kids are not going to know, other than, you know, is their advisor a man or a woman, how long the advisor has been in place. They're not going to know beyond their principals or administrators, is it a man or a woman, how long that person's been in place, and whether there's a history of censorship in their school. And those are variables that would be really neat to find out, and I think really important in determining sort of the culture of censorship at each individual school. So in an ideal world, we'd find that out as well. The age and experience of the advisors and their willingness to be able to, and, you know, there are any legal protections they have. Like in California, we know there are legal protections in place to protect advisors from backlash, and some other states as well, there's been some protections for advisors for backlash. from pushing stories
right.
through that there are not in other states. So those are additional questions we would like to explore. That, you know, this is the beginning. This is a pilot. This is 400 kids in one state. I mean, the results supported what we anecdotally all suspected, but it is by far, I mean, there is much more research to be done on this. This is not the last word on it by any means. It's just, it's a first step in what we think is going to be a long journey in looking at and supporting the girls' voices throughout, you know, their journey toward leadership in journalism and elsewhere, because the more they are able to have their voices heard, the more likely they are to move into leadership roles.
Just in the minute or so that we have left, we talked about what the takeaway from this research might be for the research community, for the journalism education community. What about for the policymakers, for the people in authority in schools, the people who are creating this kind of a climate? Do you think that spotlighting the impact that the censorship climate has on female students might in any way be an eye-opener for people in authority?
I would like to hope so. I would like to believe that a principal who is truly, and you know, I'll use a principal or a vice principal, who is truly dedicated to making sure that regardless of the gender of his or her students, that each student gets the full opportunity to be heard and to benefit from the opportunities in the school, that they don't want to cut off a big chunk, you know, of their entire student body from being able to be heard and developed to his or her full potential. So the fact that we know now with empirical evidence that a big chunk of their student body is feeling silenced should be a big eye-opener. You know, we would like to encourage principals to hands off the student media anyway. We that's what we want to do anyway. When I open all my stories to student groups, I say, you know, just because I'm talking about girls here doesn't mean that I want boys to be censored. I want all numbers to be zero, all numbers to be zero.
Sure.
I don't want anybody censored. But that being said, I certainly want to put the spotlight on girls right now, because now we know that there's a disparate effect on girls. And this is something that I've suspected all along and now has got a little bit of oomph behind it in terms of the numbers. And I would like principals to know that. And the policy paper that Peter and I are working on right now is going to make some recommendations to principals to keep their eyes open for that kind of thing, to recognize that there is this disparate effect and to take steps to be sure to acknowledge that in their classrooms, whether or not they know it, or can appreciate it, that girls are feeling more silenced, and to, you know, to take affirmative steps in recognizing that even though their girls may seem to have, you know, the shriller voices and the bigger mouths and maybe the bigger problems, because we know even from some case law that girls are in leadership roles largely because they're able to step up to the microphones or step into student government roles, that they still have additional burdens to bear. You know, even at the Supreme Court level, we know this now. And, you know, thank goodness for those folks who did that research, because that's going to be a big help for us. I mean, even if you are, you know, Elena Kagan, you are still not immune from being interrupted by your male colleagues. And, you know, if you are, you know, Sonia Sotomayor and you're still not immune, what happens if you're, you know, Katie Smith in pigtails? What happens to her? And that worries me a lot. And that, I think, is a big wake-up call for principals, is we need to support all girls from kindergarten on up. And now that we know that there's a disparate impact, we have an additional burden, our teachers and administrators, to be able to provide them additional support and protection for their voices, which are unique and important, vibrant, and beautiful.
Well, Janelle Belmas, Associate Professor at the University of Kansas School of Journalism, I really want to thank you for this valuable contribution to the discussion about improving the climate for journalism in our schools. And I want to commend to everybody's attention this wonderful article Mixed Message Media, Girls' Voices and Civic Engagement in Student Journalism. It is co-authored by Janelle Belmas and Peter Bobkowski. It's in the spring 2017 edition of the journal Girlhood Studies. And we'll so look forward to sharing the paper that you're preparing for principals and administrators, an additional valuable resource. Thank you again, Professor Belmas. And thanks to all of you for listening to the Student Press Law Center's monthly podcast. We hope that you'll contact the SPLC if you're experiencing difficulties making your voice heard in school or in college, and that you'll tune in every month for more updates on the news affecting the rights of student journalists everywhere. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.